I will say that I first came into In and Out of Alcoholics Anonymous probably in the early 80s. The 80s are very blurry for me. Okay, my sobriety date is 98. So as you can see, it took me a long time to get a sobriety date. And I didn't realize there was going to be so many newcomers. I should have. I mean, the name of the meeting, right? But I was thinking about the differences of when I came to AA and when I came into AA. I attended AA for a long time. I got a lot of big books. I mean, I've stolen big books because y'all told me to get a big book, so I did. And I bought a lot of, and I've given a lot of big books away now. When I couldn't catch a sobriety date and I would go to different meetings and I would have a different sobriety date at different meetings, it got very confusing and then I couldn't remember where to go. And I mean, I've tossed big books out the door, at the car window, driving home, going, well, I don't know if I was driving home, but so it was very frustrating because what I heard was you come to the meetings, you buy a book or you get a book, you have a sponsor, and you don't drink and life gets better. That's what I heard. And so that's what I tried to do. And that didn't work for me, and I'm fairly good girl, I only child. I was an only grandchild on one side, the first granddaughter on the other side, and everybody lived in the same little town. And I felt very special and loved. And nobody, well, in that first generation doesn't drink. So I don't know where the alcoholism came from, but by golly, I got it because whenever I drink, I cannot tell you what's going to happen. I don't know if I'm coming home or if it's going to be a few days or, if I've actually moved. Maybe I've moved, There's an old joke about how can you tell two alcoholics are on their second date? The U-Haul's out front. And that was kind of it, So the, I assumed if I could just get my ducks in a row, get the right him, the right house, the right job, the right car, the right stuff, get all my external fixtures set in place, like I saw a lot of people doing, that I would be okay. It would be okay. And it never was. I never could get everything in place all at one time. And so my sobriety, my using, I've been homeless, carless, and jobless. I had insurance in a different name and driver's license in a different name. I didn't work under my real name half the time. I mean, there wasn't a lot of internet, right? So it was a lot easier to do this. I mean, I just dreamed things up and I'd set them and poof, that's the truth. And so when I came in, this last time, I was really scared. I really thought I was going to die. And I couldn't stop drinking, and I wanted to stop drinking. That my sobriety date's in January. That summer, I'd been in a head-on car wreck, cut out with the jaws of life. It was like, oh, that's me in the ambulance on the morning news, I'm okay, but I wasn't driving for once. But I was out running the streets at 3A, right? Closed down the highway, caused a lot of people a lot of headaches in the morning that were trying to go to work. But I ended up with a chunk of change. Because the other guy was driving the wrong way on the highway. So I bought a little house. I put up an 8-foot stockade fence around the backyard so I'd be safe. And I bought a little dog. I went on an all-inclusive vacation because I didn't trust myself to travel and not have enough money to get home, right? Taking the trip, not taking the trip, maybe. So I've got all the stuff now. I've got my own house. I own the key. Nobody can kick me out, I've got my car. I've got a little job. I only work like 8 to 12, sometimes 11, but I've got a little job. I got a little dog, and things aren't going well. I should be as happy as a lark. I don't have anybody beating the crap out of me. I'm not running from anybody. I'm okay. I mean, everything looks okay. Mom and dad are pleased as punch. They've, helped me move in and bought me some dishes and, got my little house set up. And I can't stop drinking. And there's the problem, because I've always thought as soon as I get this, then I can stop drinking. As soon as he, they, whoever changes, then I'll be okay and then I won't have to drink. I got money in the bank. I got a little house. I've always wanted a dog since I was a kid, right? I got one. It turns out it was a one-eyed blind dog, but it was a dog. And that's where the problem became because I had been to AA, and I thought it didn't work for me because I thought I'd tried it. I'd had a sponsor. I wrote a four-step one time. Poor lady that listened to that poor pathetic thing, right? I just blah, everything was out. But this time when I came in, I was actually scared that I wasn't going to be able to not drink. And I was going to a psychiatrist, and she was trying to help me. And she said, I know you're not an alcoholic, but AA is a large group of people that are trying not to drink, and you're trying not to drink, and I've got stringy hair, and I'm in my coat, and I'm peeking through, going, yeah, that's me. So I basically came to AA as a mole. Okay. And I was just going to hang out with y'all and not drink for a year. That's all I was going to do. And by the time I got here, I couldn't remember the Lord's Prayer. And I'm in Kansas and Texas. That's how we close meetings around here usually. I couldn't hardly read. I couldn't string the sentences together. I couldn't comprehend any longer, and I thought I was kind of smart, or at least average, And I was thinking about that. My first sponsor asked me to read the big book, and I'm like, I'm trying. I can't figure it out. I can't remember where I am from day to day. So she said to read the 12 and 12, just the first step. And I went home all ready to do this. And I'm like, oh my God, it's like 3 pages long. And she wants me to read this every night. I mean, I hadn't read 3 pages in years, right? But the irony is, the thing is that I tried to read those pages. I mean, I'm a liar and a cheat. Why didn't I lie? Did you read? Yeah. Good stuff. Yeah. Get on my knees and pray at night. Get on your knees in the morning and say please. Say thank you at night, please in the morning. And I did it. And I live alone with a one-eyed blind dog. And I am so pissed off that this AA has me on my knees in my own house, humiliating me, asking. Saying thanks and asking for help in the morning. I mean, I am just madder than hell. I go to bed just mad. I mean, fingernails dug into my palms. And in the morning, I wake up and I glance at the clock and I sobered up on the third edition, which the 417 page was on page 449. Acceptance is the answer to, oh my God, that's how I felt then. And I'd glance over at the clock because it was before a cell phone. And it would say 449. And I'd go, cute God. So the very thing that I don't think is in the room at night is playing a little joke on me in the morning. And I'm acknowledging a presence. I didn't even realize this. I mean, it was years before I put these things together. But I did it. Did you say a prayer? And I was thinking about this too, is Rebecca was my first sponsor. She was one of those ones when she walked into the room, people would go, Reba, their little voices lilted up. They were so excited to see her. And me, it's like, Deb, I'm getting flatlined. But and she was so full of life and so sparkly. Her eyes shined, and she would talk to me and she never quizzed me about whether I did it or not. But if I had a bad day, if I was having a rough day, then she would ask me, well, did you try this? So it wasn't, me bringing my little scorecard back going, did you do this? Did you do that? Yes, I did. Didn't work. Because I'm just defiant. So this Friday, I started, Okay, so I got really sick, so I quit drinking, quit smoking, quit caffeine, quit red meat, and quit sugar all the one day. Yeah, that's the way I do it. And if I'm gonna suffer, I'm gonna suffer, and everybody's gonna suffer around me. But so I had just quit smoking, and I went to this AA group, and there was like 120 people there, and all the girls and boys are in there, and they're all saying hi to each other, and I'm just watching. I'm the mole, right? And they opened up the meeting. And I never took a chip until like 9 months. I'm too scared. I'm too scared to raise my hand. I can't hardly introduce myself. My heart just will not, I don't have words. And they would introduce themselves and they'd read all our readings and they'd all be happy and bouncing and they'd go, and all the non-smokers go in there in that little room, you know, with those old people my age or younger carrying their books, much like my little thing that I carry my book in now. And I went and sat in that meeting with them because I was now a non-smoker. I had to go in there. I didn't have to go in there, but thank goodness I didn't know. Because if I'd have sat in that big room, I would have treated it just like a bar. Who's looking at me? Who's talking to me? Whose attention am I getting? Whose attention do I want to get? I wouldn't have sat and listened, you know? And I did listen. You know, they would pat me on my shoulder and they're like, Deb, you're going to have to share one of these days. And I'm like, I know, I'm trying. You know, and Rebecca wrote me a little note card. I had a lot of little note cards and I'd put it in my lap. And it would say, "Hi, I'm Debbie. I'm an alcoholic. I'm grateful to be here and I pass." And I would hold my breath and I'd look up to make sure that they were really going to pass and not force me to speak, right? But that's how I began sharing. I mean, I'm still kind of all over the board, but I can smile and I can take full breaths when I share now. You know, and that came from following and applying some of these principles, not just learning them. I'm an information gatherer. You know, I'll buy the book, I'll listen to it, I'll take notes. Where's the workbook? I want to do that. I want to know so that I can do it correctly, so that when you say it didn't work, I'm going, nope, looky here. I got it on my paper. I did it just like you said, didn't work. Okay, I quit. I'm a little too ready to go quit, aren't I? Why do I want to quit? So I can go back to doing what I know how to do, even if it's painful. You know, this is hard. It's a strenuous effort, vigorous. I mean, that's how it addresses the fourth step. It's not easy, but my goodness. I mean, I came from stringy hair peeking out to somebody that'll sit up and try to talk to y'all and go, I don't know exactly, but I'm excited about how it works. You know, I read the same silly book over and over and over, and I see new things. You know, I see new perspectives. One of the things that it's taught me was to look at my definition of things and maybe change. You know, it's like, oh, is that bad that happened to you? Well, maybe. Is it really bad? Is it really good? Is it different? It's different because I want to rate everything and compare everything and justify everything so that I can get it right. And there's a whole lot of I's in that instead of trust in a power, you know, and whatever you want to call this power. And thank goodness we don't have to name it and write it in ink what my God is, because the God that I thought I was seeing, you know, in the corner of the room playing tricks on me with 449 on my clock is not the same power that I have today. You know, I'm like, I was scared to believe in something other than what I thought that they, you know, in the pretty buildings with the stained glass had wanted me to believe in. Okay. I have done that and I am proof that I did not get zapped by a lightning bolt. Not yet. I mean, it could happen, but you know, and when people call me the wrong name, they call me Betty or something because I don't already always enunciate good. I don't get mad. And if this God is all forgiving and all powerful and all, I don't think he's going to get his feeling hurt if I call him the wrong name. You know, I had somebody call him Gus, great universal spirit, you know, Howard, because the prayer says Howard be in heaven, so it must be, you know, Art be his name, you know, call him Simon, call him whatever you want. You know? And that's okay. Which is just like, if that's okay, what else can I try to expand my little mind on and be okay with? Could I believe something else could be different? You know? I read books now that I wouldn't have owned in my house. I wouldn't have even told you. I mean, I still can't pronounce half these people's names. But what I think they're talking about is kindness and caring and compassion, you know? And I think that's what our book tells us. I mean, and it's really early on page 29 here. It says real tolerance of other people's shortcomings and viewpoints and respect for their opinions are attitudes which make us more useful. Useful for being here, you know? One of my greatest fears is that I am irrelevant. It does not matter why I'm here. It doesn't matter that I'm here. You know, that fear pops up and I'm like, nope, it's okay. Child of God, I'm just a little cog in the wheel. I am one, you know. I'm not the biggest or the greatest or anything. I'm okay. And I'm supposed to be here because I'm here, you know, and that's okay. And that belief has continued to change as I can continue to change my views of myself. You know, it used to be, what does it say? Pride says you need not look and fear says you dare not. You know, and that's where I lived. I mean, ping pong between the two. I never could get that accurate self-appraisal. And I'll share another thing that I, you know, in page 98, you'll have to look it up because I'm running out of time here, is in the 12 and 12, it says, and I'm going to mess it up. Well, here, we won't mess it up. We'll just read it. Page 98 in the 12 and 12, in step 11. And I just love this little line. It says here, there is a direct linkage among self-examination, meditation, and prayer. Okay, all three, not just two or one, which I like to do just two. Taken separately, these practices can bring much relief and benefit. But when they are logically related and interwoven, the result is an unshakable foundation for life. Unshakable foundation for life. That's what I want. I have always felt like I'm living on thin ice, that you pull the rug out over here and, you know, I die under a box, sometimes with a box, under a bridge, sometimes with a box, sometimes without, you know, depending on the day.
We?
2 minutes.
Yes,
Thank
ma'am.
you. Thank you, Connie. And so sometimes I want to do all the inventory. Sometimes I want to do all the praying, and sometimes I just want to sit on a pillow and meditate for days, not talk to anyone. It's lovely in here. All of those are good, but when I can bring them all three to every single day, that's when the other thing that I like is Dr. Bob and the good old timers, that plaque on humility that was on Dr. Bob's desk. Perpetual quietness of heart. Perpetual quietness of heart. That's where I want to live. And that's where I can live. I mean, I go up and I go down, but I can recenter. You know, I think of it as my North Star. I can breathe in. How am I right now? Right now, I'm okay. It looks like crap out there, but right here, you know, and I touch my heart because it recenters me, you know, and it's like, and I'm okay. You know, maybe I need to call somebody. Maybe I need to redirect. Maybe I'm not headed in the same direction that I had set out to head this morning. You know, I'll say another thing about the morning because I want to pray, meditate, and read my little book in the morning. I'll read two or three books, text people. I did my morning routine, and I read somewhere that it's like taking the on-ramp onto the freeway into my day. I'm like, okay, now I'm here. I need to take those things all day with me. It's not just to get me going. It's an all day. And that was one of my unfavorite words in step 10 was continue. Because I want to be done. I want you to give me my gold star. What do I want to be done for? I think because I want to go sit on the couch and not do anything and not be held accountable. I still am kind of appalled that's where it goes, but that's it. All right. Thank you guys for having your cameras on and smiling and waving.